Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star, then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you so much, Bella, and I too would like to welcome everyone to today's workshop. And today's workshop is a collaboration, a partnership with the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation and Cancer Care. And they've been partnering with us on a number of these programs. We have more to come. And you'll be hearing more from the Executive Director, Bonnie Fuchs, of the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation shortly. And today's program is for caregivers, coping with the stresses of caregiving when your loved one has triple negative breast cancer. And this is part two of living with triple negative breast cancer. And today's program was made possible by the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation, and we really want to thank them for their support to this program. Now, before I introduce our first speaker, I just would like to mention a few things. We have over 250 participants on the call today, so we're delighted to have all of you on the call. And you come from all over the United States, from both urban, rural, suburban, and frontier communities. And we also have a number of international participants from Canada, Germany, Namibia, the Philippines, South Africa, Switzerland, Tanzania, and the United Kingdom. So it's truly a global call, and that's kind of amazing that you're all chosen to spend this time with us, to hear about for a program that's for caregivers of people living with triple negative breast cancer. And now it is my great pleasure to introduce our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Marcela Mazo-Canola. Dr. Mazo is Assistant Professor of Medicine, Division of Hematology Oncology, Breast Medical Oncology, UT Health San Antonio Mays Cancer Center. And Dr. Mazo will be addressing an overview of metastatic triple negative breast cancer and the important role of the caregiver in communicating with the healthcare team. It is my great pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Mazo.
Dr. Messner, thank you so much for the invitation, and it's an honor for me to be here in this global teleconference. So I want to start the discussion by explaining how do we make the diagnosis of triple negative breast cancer. So overall, when a patient has a tumor or tumors in their body, you will see that their doctor will request a biopsy. One of the testing that we do on those biopsies when it shows breast cancer is that we run something called receptors. One is called estrogen receptor, the other one is called progesterone receptor, and there is another protein that is overexpressed in some cancers that is called HER2. 70% of the cases do have expression for estrogen and progesterone. We call that hormone receptor positive breast cancer. Another 15% of the cases has HER2 overexpression, that is HER2 positive breast cancer. And when the tumor cells lack expression of estrogen receptor or HER2, we call those tumors triple negative breast cancer. So triple negative breast cancer is about 15% of the cases that we see, and it represents about 200,000 cases worldwide every year. Triple negative breast cancer is a form of aggressive cancer that tends to present in younger patients, patients of African American ethnicity, and is also linked with germline mutations, which means mutations that we have in our genes that could increase our lifetime risk of hereditary breast cancer. Now, what does it mean to be metastatic? So usually when the cancer cells spread from the organ of origin to affect our organs in our body, such as our lung, our bones, our brain, our liver, this is when we tell our patients that they have advanced or metastatic breast cancer. Usually, metastatic breast cancer is a disease that is not susceptible to be cured with the treatments that we have, but thankfully, we have available therapies that we can give to our patients with the goal of improving their quality of life and improve their symptom burden. So nowadays, with the science that we have, we check other proteins in the cancer cells, and I will mention PD-L1. PD-L1 is something that we test in the cancer cells to see if patients or have susceptibility to be treated with a form of treatment called immunotherapy. So your doctor will test the tumor cells for that and determine if the tumor cells are sensitive to this specific agent. And usually we will combine immunotherapy with cytotoxic chemotherapy. However, we're having very exciting emerging data with the use of a type of medications called antibody drug conjugates. These are kind of the new kid on the block when it comes to oncology, and these are treatments that have something called a monoclonal antibody, which is a protein that will attach to the cancer cells, and they're attached to a form of chemotherapy. And basically, the cancer cells take that protein in and they get destroyed by these agents. Two that it's worth mentioning is sacituzumab govoitecan. There was recent exciting data that showed very promising results with this medication. And there was also mention of a newer antibody drug conjugate called datopotamab deruxtecan, which is another antibody drug conjugate that show very exciting effect as far as controlling the cancer cells with very good tolerance for our patients. Now, it is important to highlight what is the role of the caregiver when they go with the patients to these appointments. It is important to have a clear understanding of what's the stage of the triple negative breast cancer. It is important as a patient advocate to make sure that the patient's needs and preference are expressed to the treating physician. A caregiver should also try to get detailed information from the healthcare provider with the goal of sharing that information with the patient themselves and their family. It is important as well to provide support, take notes, ask questions, help the patients recall important details about their appointments or specific side effects that they can suffer from the treatment so those can be communicated effectively to the treating physician. Now, I will highlight that it's important for you as a caregiver to get permission from the patient before you communicate certain things to their healthcare team. So always make sure that you discuss ahead of time what things you have permission to discuss so we don't incur into any privacy violations. Always come prepared and take notes. Perhaps provide specific examples to the treating physicians to share exactly what your patients are struggling with. And obviously, it's important to highlight this, seek support yourself. Caregiving can be a demanding role, and seeking support yourself and getting information from reliable sources is key to help you cope as a caregiver and to be a more effective and useful caregiver. And that's kind of in a nutshell, you know, a quick overview of the treatment of triple negative breast cancer and the important role of the caregiver in communicating with the healthcare team.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Mazza. That was a wonderful, just a stellar presentation. And because you are the first speaker, you really set the tone for today's program. So not only did you go over the medical part of the treatment, but you also reviewed some of the emotional and social aspects for caregivers. So thank you. Thank you so much. And I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Just a stellar presentation. Thank you. And our next speaker is Dr. Guadalupe Palos. Dr. Palos is actually her own healthcare team. She's a doctor of public health, master's in social work, and an RN, a nurse. So she definitely has all the qualifications to talk about. She's former clinical protocol administration manager, Office of Cancer Survivorship, the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, author and researcher in caregiving, healthcare disparities, and survivorship. And Dr. Palos will be addressing your important role in decision-making and taking on the role of caregiving and what research tells us about caregivers managing family, friends, and long-distance caregivers. It is my great pleasure to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Palos.
Hi, everyone. It's a pleasure to join this esteemed panel and our supporters of this panel and presentation, and of course, all of you are amazing participants. Dr. Messner, I'd like to thank you for your kind introduction. I'd like to just share a quick story of how I developed my commitment to caregiver research. My research was inspired by the cancer patients, families, and caregivers I met over many years as an oncology nurse and then as a researcher. I interviewed or listened to about 300 stories through a funded grant that I had from the NCI, and the stories were given to me by the caregivers of patients who usually receive their care at comprehensive cancer centers or public hospitals. These stories truly opened my eyes to the unique challenges and rewards of being a caregiver to a loved one diagnosed with cancer. And of course, like many of you on this call, I've had several experiences on a personal level with being a caregiver. So let me start with the first topic. And I think I have a fun area because I get to share with you about all the current research that's going on about caregiving. Now, many of you joining this session are already familiar with the profound physical and emotional effects experienced by caregivers. There's a lot of research in this area, excellent research. Now, these effects, as you know, are not just theoretical. They are lived realities for many, and perhaps some of you are encountering these very challenges right now. So I'd like to begin, though, by discussing the emerging research on loneliness, social isolation, and grief, and their impact on caregivers. Recent research shows that these emotions negatively affect the health of caregivers. Social isolation increases the risk of a range of negative health outcomes. Now, despite the evidence that show informal caregivers, which many of you are, the family or unpaid carers of people and loved ones with cancer, of course, and friends and other folks in the community are sometimes involved in our caregiving, the evidence shows that informal caregivers are at increased risk to unhealthy outcomes. However, our understanding of how the cancer overlaps with isolation, with grief, with mourning and loneliness remains limited. More research is needed to fully grasp the scope and nature of caregivers' experiences with these emotions so that effective interventions can be developed. A second area that we see the research now really focusing on, and again, it hasn't been studied extensively, relates to the changes in unmet needs of caregivers over time. We have a lot of research that focuses on a period of time, right? Cross-sectional is what they call it. But those that follow caregivers over the whole course of the cancer experience are very limited. And most of that is because it's complex and it's costly. But there is one study that came out that followed caregivers over 8 years. This is a very unique study. Well, what they found is that over the 8 years, there were changes in caregiving and the caregiver role as the patient's illnesses progresses. Now, identifying unmet needs over the cancer experience is a means, a way of helping to reduce the stress and improving quality of life. So again, this is an area where we need to have ongoing research. A third topic, which I find particularly exciting, is the role of intergenerational cancer caregiving, especially as it pertains to decision-making within family. This area explores how caregiver responsibilities, decisions, and choices are influenced across different generations. And I wish I had more time to talk about this because it's fascinating. However, we do know that some emergent research shows that there is a growing number of children and adolescents taking on the role of young cancer caregivers. And when these young individuals are acknowledged, professionals often remain uncertain about the best ways to support them. So again, to increase support and to find out what the needs are of these young caregivers, it's necessary to conduct more comprehensive research focusing on their experiences and needs. Now let's talk a little bit about the role of family and friends in decision making. Family members play a crucial role in the decision making process for patients. Now, many of us may think, oh, they're not listening to us, but they are listening to when you're giving your opinions, your advice, and your concerns. However, families often face difficult choices related to cancer treatments and care. And regrettably, caregivers don't always know how to support decision-making. Caregivers often struggle to understand the patient's condition and quality of life, complicating their support role. Clinicians are encouraged to support shared decision-making. Now, traditionally, we see shared decision-making focusing on the patient and the physician's communication. However, expanding this approach to include families is highly recommended, as differences may exist between the patients and their families regarding desired involvement in the treatment decisions. So what about long-distance caregivers? What is their role in their loved one's experience? Well, as we have heard twice already from our previous speakers, globalization has had a tremendous impact on family dynamics. So when a caregiver does not live nearby, being informed about your loved one's situation and staying up to date with their needs often requires extra effort. Long-distance caregivers often have unique challenges, including the need for caregivers to stay informed, organize key information, designate contacts, and keep records updated. And this may also be changing constantly over the trajectory of the cancer experience. The calls and the people involved in the care at the beginning of a cancer diagnosis can be much different from the folks that are needed during treatment or after treatment. And that doesn't even include all the other team members that are needed for comorbid conditions like hypertension, diabetes, and all those others. Now, long-distance caregivers, what the research has shown is that they often experience feelings of guilt, stress, or loneliness. Providing adequate support for long-distance caregivers is essential in addressing these challenges. Now, again, this is an area where research is limited because we tend to have our studies focus on a period of time, but not like long-term. And now, because of survivorship and the many years that our patients are living after their diagnosis and treatment is completed, this is an area now that we can focus on much more than what we have in the past. Now, our other speakers, Ms. Bosley, Ms. Fuchs, and Ms. Dugan, will provide valuable information on strategies and resources to cope with the stress and rewards of being a caregiver to a loved one with triple-negative breast cancer. But I'd like to highlight a couple of practical approaches. Use the available technologies, such as the phone calls, video chats, messaging apps, or specialized caregiving platforms. This helps maintain frequent communication with the patients and other family members involved in their care. And Dr. Fleischman is going to provide helpful steps to being successful in using these technologies, and he does an excellent job. It's important to keep that organize and keep key information updated and readily available. These documents, especially the documents related to medical decision making, advanced directives, access to medical records, emergency contacts, et cetera, will be helpful to have all together so you can facilitate access to them right away. And I know all of you have probably heard of this, but it's a nice reminder to remember to designate a primary contact person, because it's just like when you cook. The more cooks that are involved in, you know, watching the pot, the more confusing it can get. So have one primary person be designated. Long-distance caregivers should keep in mind that their role may come with distinct emotional and logistical challenges. Again, feelings of guilt, stress, or loneliness can arise due to the distance, but using effective communication strategies can help lessen these difficulties. Being proactive and making use of available tools and resources, don't reinvent the wheel, will help long-distance caregivers provide meaningful support even when they live very far across the globe. So a diagnosis of triple negative breast cancer, as Dr. Lazo so eloquently described, presents particularly complex challenges due to the unique nature of this disease. However, it's important to remember that there are valuable resources and knowledgeable experts available to help guide patients, caregivers, and providers even through each stage of this experience. Navigating cancer, regardless of type, is never something that should be done alone or in isolation. I encourage caregivers, patients, and providers alike to reach out for support, whether it is family, friends, or even unexpected acquaintances who cross your path during this time. Accept their role, their help, and their connection to you, because they can make a meaningful difference. And it's often more than coincidence that brings certain individuals, especially like strangers, into your life as you move through this journey. In closing, I'd like to remind folks that November is Caregiver Month, so take time to participate in some of the activities offered by many organizations that focus on caregiving. And I'd like to thank you all for taking the time to listen to my remarks. And Dr. Messner, that's all for me. I would now like to return the program to you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Paulus. That was just a superb presentation. Really stellar in every way. And you really covered a lot of topics in a very brief time, actually, when I think about it. But you covered all of the essential things for caregivers to keep in mind. And I know there'll be a lot of questions for you during the Q&A as well. So thank you so very much. Thank you. And our next speaker is Ms. Kate Boskey. And Ms. Boskey is a nurse practitioner, outpatient supportive care, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. And Ms. Boskey will be addressing caregiving for your loved one with metastatic triple negative breast cancer, coping with each day on holidays, birthdays, and special occasions, and challenges in communicating with the healthcare team. It is my great pleasure to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Boskey.
Thank you so much, Dr. Messner, for that introduction. So happy to be here today with everyone. As a former caregiver myself, I have seen the other side, and so I hope some of the information that I share today is helpful for you. Coping as a caregiver is a challenge, regardless of the clinical status of your family member or the amount of caregiving needs that you're providing. Being aware and mindful on how you're coping and identifying resources to help are important. You want to ensure to take care of yourself. Get counseling support. Choose the support that is right for you, whether it's in a support group, from a spiritual advisor, by a social worker, or from your peers. Make sure that you're doing some physical activity. Take care of yourself by eating good meals. Make sure you're getting adequate sleep and rest. And make sure that you set aside some time in the day just for you. And this might mean allowing others to provide care for your family member so that you can have respite. On special occasions, birthdays, holidays, coping can be even more challenging. Generally, holidays are times of joy. However, for patients and loved ones facing cancer, there can be feelings of anxiety or sadness. There may be an altered ability to prepare for or engage in festivities. And so it may be important to reframe expectations of how a certain holiday or day is going to go. Maybe you can't travel far to see a loved one. However, you may be able to video call or use other technology to touch base during the day. Sometimes there's sadness surrounding worry that your family member might be missing future occasions. And so it's really important to really focus on the day-to-day and really focus on making memories with your family member. Strategies to help you cope during these times are to acknowledge your feelings and understand that there are others that are going through what you're going through, and the way that you're feeling is both normal and appropriate. Lean on your sources of counsel to help you cope. Like I said, this may be through a support group or psychologist, through a social worker or spiritual advisor. And make sure that you're resetting and reframing your expectations and activities to meet you and your loved one where you are. Try to be present and enjoy these moments, occasions, and holidays so that you can make more wonderful memories together. There are always challenges in communicating with the healthcare team. Communicating effectively with your loved one's healthcare team is an important strategy to ensure best outcomes. Barriers to being able to communicate effectively are a lack of knowledge about the disease, treatments, and side effects, not having a consistent point of contact within the healthcare team, not knowing or being aware of what resources might be available to you as a caregiver, language and cultural barriers, technology barriers, and overall an anxiety about being a caregiver. So tips for effective communication is learning about your loved one's health, the treatments, and the side effects of any treatment they may be on. make sure you're asking about available caregiving resources. This will help you understand and be able to acknowledge your feelings about what's going on. Learning about your loved one's illness may help you to anticipate the course of an illness and prevent crises, and you'll be able to better assist in healthcare management. Organize important paperwork in one place and provide copies to other caregivers or family members that may be involved. This includes up-to-date healthcare documents, wills, financial information, medication lists, and appointment dates. Make sure to stay connected by scheduling calls with your healthcare providers to discuss your loved one's well-being and update family members on your loved one's conditions. This may mean reaching out to the nurse or social worker or nurse navigator in the oncology office or practice that you go to help understand exactly what's going on. To every extent possible, from a medical standpoint, we recommend that one person should handle the conversations with the healthcare providers and pass that information along to other family members or caregivers caring for the patient. Please ensure that each person has written permission to receive medical information. Remember to establish and maintain a care plan. This will be an invaluable tool that saves time and optimizes care for your loved one. This should include a list of their health conditions, medications, their healthcare providers, emergency contacts, and caregiver resources. The CDC has a caregiving care plan template on their website that you can fill out directly and print. Remember to talk to your healthcare team about any challenges or symptoms so that they can help to clearly communicate back to you. Overall, make sure that you have questions for the provider written down for each appointment so that nothing gets forgotten. Remember what they're taking for medication so that you can review that list with the oncology team and make sure that your family member has medications that they need for side effects from their cancer or from their treatment. And always have a better understanding of their health conditions, rely on this care plan, and you will feel more in control of what's going on with your family member. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Bosky. That was just a wonderful presentation. Just outstanding, and really you covered so many issues for caregivers to address during special occasions and holidays, birthdays, and challenges in communicating with the healthcare team. I think you've really given people a wonderful guideline of what to do. I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A, and just a stellar presentation. Thank you. And our next speaker is Dr. Stuart Fleischman, and Dr. Fleischman is former founding director, Cancer Support Services, Continuum Cancer Centers of New York, now part of the Mount Sinai Health System, author and researcher in oncology. And Dr. Fleischman will be addressing guidelines to prepare for telehealth, telemedicine appointments, including prepared list of questions, quality of life concerns, discussion of open notes, and follow-up appointments. It's my pleasure now to turn to introduce my esteemed colleague, Dr. Stuart Fleischman.
Hey, Dr. Messner, and thank you everybody for signing on to the call. One of the unintended consequences of the COVID pandemic has been the use of devices, whether it's a phone or a tablet or a computer, to communicate back and forth with the patient's care team in the office or in the local cancer center or even cancer centers very far away. Sometimes we think of unintended consequences as bad things, but this happened to be something that was good, especially for caregivers, because it used to be that if a caregiver wanted to come to a visit with the patient, whether they were down the block or in a different city or a different country, that would include travel to the office where the patient was being seen. Now, with the advent of telehealth or various ways to communicate between patients and us providers with the proper permission, as people have explained already. You can actually sign in onto the call, be it on a telephone or a computer or a tablet, and be present for that visit. That is very helpful. It's very helpful to you because you find out what's happening with the patient, but it's very helpful to the patient in a number of ways. You can be the person who keeps notes. You can be the person who maintains the list of questions to make sure that as many questions get answered as possible. And as others said, you can maintain the medication list. You can actually do a lot of the busy work for the patient who may not be feeling up to it because of their cancer or their treatment. Having these calls is not necessarily challenging, but something that you need to prepare for. So if it's the first time that you are attending this call with the patient and you're with the patient, then somebody needs to make sure of the time and date of the call. You need to know if the cancer center or office will be calling you or you'll be calling them. You need to know if it's going to be a telephone call or it's something that uses video on your computer or on your phone or on your tablet, and make sure that the proper software on the platform, the technology that this practice uses is something you can access. Often if it's your first call, the provider's office will actually make arrangements in advance to make sure that you have access to the platform. And sometimes they will even do a dry run call, a sort of rehearsal call, just to make sure the connection can happen in a seamless way. Make sure that the devices are charged, try to be in a quiet place, and if you are not physically with the patient but in a remote location, then someone else needs to take charge of all of these things, whether it's the patient or another family member. And it's very, very helpful to be able to be on the call, ask the questions, keep the notes, and make sure that especially quality of life concerns are addressed, because sometimes patients themselves do not want to discuss these things, feeling it may be superfluous or too much of a burden for the provider team, or they just don't want to think of themselves or their symptoms as a burden. So it's a very valuable role you can play, whether you're in the room, across town, or in another part of the world. These visits can entail either initial visits, where initial history is taken, and it could be the prelude for an in-office visit to have a full physical exam. And a lot of the information that would be collected there can be collected in advance over the phone or through a video conferencing system. The other type of visit that could be, it could actually be a follow-up visit. And follow-up visits where the provider already knows you, some people say it's easier to connect over a follow-up visit, but these can be really very helpful to avoid traveling to the cancer center for something that does require a lot of physical examination in order to make decisions. So this can be very, very helpful. So whether it's an initial visit or a follow-up visit, really need to sort of follow the same guidelines about having the device charged in a place and the list and the things I just mentioned. One of the other things that Dr. Messner wanted us to review is the concept that for many of us, we have access to our medical charts if the cancer center or the provider's office uses an electronic medical chart. And that has been very helpful for some people. It has been quite anxiety-provoking and been a burden for other people. Because of the way that the privacy and confidentiality laws were crafted in the United States, one of the things that happens practically all the time is that as soon as a report from a lab test or a pathology report or an X-ray, any kind of imaging study, is available to the provider, the patient and or the caregiver can actually see that report. Sometimes you see it even before the provider's office has had a chance to look at it because they can get hundreds of these a day. Make sure that you don't read it and jump to the wrong conclusion. These reports are complex to read without the proper training and without the proper context. Sometimes when you look at lab values, especially if someone's in the midst of chemotherapy, radiation therapy, targeted therapies, some of the results are supposed to be abnormal during that treatment. So I would not read these reports and jump to conclusions that are just not warranted. Reading pathology reports and imaging studies really requires experience and finesse, and it is easy to think the wrong thing. So if you see these reports and you need make sure to make a phone appointment or an appointment on the platform and review it with someone on your oncology team. People who do this all day really are in the best situation to be able to put it in context and explain the meaning of a lot of jargon, why things are included, why things that you want to find out seem to be written in code. It is rather complex. It is even difficult for people with medical and nursing backgrounds who don't do cancer all the time, because a lot of these terms keep changing and are new, and it's just really important not to jump to conclusions when you see these reports, but to get help from your provider's office. With that, I will turn the call back to Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Fleischman. That was very, very comprehensive, and really highlighted how one of the major benefits of COVID was the development of the telehealth, telemedicine appointments, which we did not have before that. And they've really allowed so much more participation from healthcare, from actually family members from far and wide, and sometimes there can be more than one on. So thank you so much. I know there'll be questions for you. That was a stellar presentation. Thank you so much. And our next speaker is Bonnie Fuchs, and Bonnie Fuchs is the Executive Director of the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation, and she is a partner organization on today's program and many of our programs we're doing on Triple Negative Breast Cancer. And she'll be discussing Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation's national programs and services, and she'll be discussing with you their helpline and website. And so I'm going to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Fuchs.
Thank you so much for the kind introduction, Dr. Messner. On behalf of the TNBC community and the TNBC Foundation, thank you to all the exceptional speakers today for their informative presentations. We are so grateful for the wonderful partnership that we have with Cancer Care. This workshop today is one of the many programs offered by the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation. Our programming is specifically designed to address the needs of the triple negative community, from patients, survivors, caregivers, and loved ones. I sincerely hope you'll take advantage of them to help navigate through diagnosis, treatment, and into survivorship. From our website, tmbcfoundation.org, we have TMBC-specific educational brochures and fact sheets that are available as free downloads, information about triple-negative breast cancer and dealing with a triple-negative diagnosis, a TMBC-specific clinical trials matching service, and information about our phone and email helpline provided by Cancer Care. Our online discussion forums allow you to connect with other patients, survivors, and caregivers to ask questions about treatment, how to manage side effects. Most importantly, these resources are here to help you and to remind you that you are not alone. It goes without saying that TNBC-specific medical research is extremely important to our foundation. We not only support cutting-edge research at leading medical institutions, but we work hard to inform you about any new developments in this area. We also have monthly virtual meetups for our TNBC community, Metastatic Mondays, Tuesdays with TNBC friends, and Thursday with TNBC friends. Please follow us on Facebook and Instagram for important updates and announcements regarding educational and support opportunities throughout the year, and be able to register for these and all our upcoming programs. Thank you so much for joining the workshop today, and I'll turn the program back over to Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Fuchs. That was just it's a wonderful organization, and it's your go-to organization for anyone with triple-negative breast cancer foundation, their loved ones, their family, people living with triple-negative breast cancer foundation. And we will be sending to all of you, so all of the, website or phone number or that we provided during the program, we will be sending that in a SurveyMonkey evaluation. You'll be getting that in about 10 days. So you'll get everything that we've never mentioned during the program. So thank you so much, Ms. Fuchs. And our next speaker is Ms. Allison Moskowitz-Dugan. She's an oncology social worker, and she's director of clinical services at Cancer Care. She has a master's degree in social work, and she'll be addressing self-care and stress management recommendations to manage the stress of caregiving. And then she'll be providing Cancer Care's free national programs and services, including the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Helpline, Cancer Care Hopeline, and our website. It's really my great pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Moskowitz.
Hi, thank you so much, Dr. Messner, and thank you so much for Ms. Fuchs for the partnership and for your wonderful overview of the TNBC Foundation's services. I'd like to take a few minutes to address the psychosocial impact that TNBC can have on caregivers and also, as Dr. Messner mentioned, highlight some cancer care programs that can be of assistance to individuals who are caring for a loved one. Caring for a loved one with TNBC can be really overwhelming. In addition, additional support and guidance can help relieve any feelings of anxiety. Working one-on-one with an oncology social worker through individual counseling can offer space to express one's feelings, emotions, and concerns. Cancer Care does offer free cancer-focused counseling to individuals who are impacted by cancer and for those who live in New York and New Jersey. Joining a support group could also be a great way of getting additional support through this time. Being a member in a support group can offer the opportunity to speak with others, gather and provide support, as well as obtain information. Cancer Care offers online support groups set to individuals across the country, and these groups take place using a password-protected message board format and are led by professional oncology social workers who offer support and guidance. They are held for 15 weeks at a time, and you can register on our website. You may also note some forms, the virtual meet and greets, and educational materials through the TNBC Foundation, which can be accessed on the website tnbcfoundation.org. Many hospitals, treatment centers, and nonprofit organizations also offer support services, including support groups as well. As mentioned earlier on the call, caregivers often have questions and concerns about practical and financial matters. It may be helpful to discuss any financial concerns with your medical providers or a social worker at your treatment center, a patient navigator, as well as the financial department at the treatment center to see if there's any financial options available to you. Cancer Care offers some limited financial assistance to individuals who qualify with TNBC. Cancer Care does provide free telephonic resource navigation services to people living with cancer, post-treatment survivors, as well as caregivers. These services are provided by professional resource navigators and oncology social workers. They're available in English and Spanish. And this service focuses on the practical challenges that arise from cancer, and staff provide clients with resources, referrals, and potential financial assistance options. I just want to mention a few other services that Cancer Care offers. On our website, we offer a wide array of reading materials, information relating to coping with cancer, triple-negative breast cancer, and caregiving. These include Recording Connect education workshops like the one we're on now, as well as our podcast and multiple publications about this topic. And I do want to mention, finally, the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation's website is tnbcfoundation.org. Cancer Care websites is cancercare.org. The Cancer Care Hopeline is 800-813-4673. And we are available Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thank you so much for the opportunity to present, and I'll pass it back to you, Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you so much. Wonderful, wonderful resources between the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation and Cancer Care. So thank you, and I'm sure there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. And now we're going to move right on to the Q&A. And I'm going to ask Bella to explain to you how to queue up for questions, for online questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
So this is a question for Dr. Palos. Can you discuss boundaries? I am my sister's caregiver, and I do try to set boundaries, but I feel like she often does not respect them.
That is an interesting question, because a couple of things. If boundaries had not been established before as you were growing up, then it's a little challenging to try to do it during this difficult time. But if you, what I have found is sitting down with someone and being honest about what boundaries you're talking about is very helpful. Those kind of conversations really help the patient and you as a caregiver to be open about what those boundaries are and to decide whether or not they're realistic boundaries and to decide how you can deal with boundaries that are stepped on or ignored. Your sister, remember, cancer is a disease that folks feel like they have no control over. So doing what you don't ask them to do or crossing those boundaries is one way of having that control back to them, even if it's for a moment. So try to be patient, try to understand, and really try to sit down and have open conversations. And sometimes open communication is challenging. So, you know, I have found that letters or little notes are also good ways to remind folks about some of those boundaries. And it's a two-way process. Remember that. Communication is a two-way process. So the patient can also say, hey, I know that's your boundary, but I can't keep up with that boundary right now. So be realistic, be patient, and negotiate. I hope that helps.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. And our next question is for Ms. Allison Moskowitz-Dugan. Where can I find resources on affordable counseling therapies? There, something like sliding scale or free?
Thank you, Dr. Messner. That's a great question. You know, there's a couple of different things that we typically suggest first. Sometimes through treatment centers, there is free or very low-cost counseling provided by the social worker or other people in the counseling center. If you're looking for sliding scale, you could reach out to any local community mental health agencies in the area to see if that is something that's offered. Often it is. And then lastly, if you're looking for someone specific, you know, someone who specifically focuses on oncology social work or oncology counseling, focused counseling, just reaching out and explaining the situation and seeing if a sliding scale is offered through a private clinician. There's unfortunately not one, you know, central location to search for a sliding scale or free or low-cost services, but usually some combination of asking around through the treatment center, any local community resources, mental health resources, and then just finally private clinicians should be able to connect you to something.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And this is a question for Ms. Bosky. What resources do you recommend using to look for financial assistance, like covering prescription copays and other fees?
That's a good question. In our clinics, we usually refer to our patient financial services team or the social worker on our team to help with that information. But ultimately, you can actually usually go to the drug maker's website, and sometimes there is copay assistance that you can apply for there. And while some of it is based on your financial income, there are sometimes drug companies do offer copay assistance even if you have the income and have the insurance. So patient financial services or going to the drug maker's website to investigate further.
Thank you so much. And question for Dr. Mazo. Because this is a more aggressive cancer, my wife is afraid of recurrence now that active treatment has ended. Could you comment on that, Dr. Mazo?
Thank you so much for the question. And the truth of the matter is, you know, it depends. We basically had discussions with our patients ahead of time as far as what is the risk of recurrence. And we tailor our strategy for treatment after they finish in a way that we mitigate the risk of recurrence. So I will advise to our listeners to go back to their care team, have a discussion with their care, with their healthcare provider as far as understanding exactly what is the risk of cancer coming back and what is the strategy that we're going to use to mitigate that risk and what's going to be the strategy for surveillance. I feel like often that gives patients a sense of control, and overall it gives them, you know, kind of a roadmap to follow and to feel more at ease with that potential risk of recurrence that they may have.
Excellent, thank you. And now I'm going to ask our speakers to provide a takeaway. I'm going to start with Dr. Amezo, just a takeaway, just a minute takeaway from today's program that you'd like people to leave the call with.
So my advice will be that as hard as it is to be a caregiver, I will say you are a vital part of our team. We really count on our caregivers to work towards the goal, which is getting our patients to get the treatment that will help them and get the treatment that will improve their survival. So even those times when you feel like things are too much, remember that you're a vital part of the team, and those patients and those family members count on you. Of course, take good care of yourself, but I just want to remind you all that your role is vital on this battle.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And Dr. Palos, your takeaway?
Mm-hmm. I'd like each of all the callers on our presentation today to ask yourself this question. Are you experiencing, do you find yourself isolating yourself? Do you feel lonely? Are you grieving the normal life you had before the diagnosis? If you answer yes to any of those, do something about your own self-care. Whether it's just going out and taking a walk and taking time away, you can meet people along the trail. Whether it's reaching out to a faith-based organization, your social worker that may be available through the hospital, and again, all the counseling services, or you can even get on the phone and call folks like Cancer Care, where they have people that will that are trained and will speak to you about some of those things that your emotions you're feeling and what to do about it. Do not do this journey by yourself. It's a tremendous burden to do it by yourself. Then just to remind folks that the advances that I spoke about in caregiving science would not be possible without caregivers participating in clinical trials. So you may want to consider volunteering to join a clinical trial if you are asked or invited to participate. Thank you all. I appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Palos. And Ms. Bosky, your takeaway?
Yeah. So caregiving is a tough job, and so the most important thing I think is definitely to care for yourself and accept help. So if someone offers to bring you a meal, if someone offers to come spend time with the patient so that you can do something that provides you joy, you say yes, and it's okay to ask for help. It's okay to rely on friends and family and other people to help support you as you support your family member.
Excellent. Thank you. And Dr. Fleischman?
Yes, I just remember that you can be much more part of your patient's medical encounters with the team at their cancer center electronically. And the second takeaway is to be really sure to get some help to read and understand all the results that come in, the lab results, the pathology reports, the imaging studies, so that you get the right information in the right context.
Thank you so much. And Ms. Hughes?
Yes, please follow us on Facebook and Instagram for important updates and announcements throughout the year so you can register for these and all our upcoming programs. But most importantly, these resources are here to help you and to remind you that you are not alone.
Excellent. That is such an excellent point. And Ms. Moskowitz-Dugan?
Yes, just to reiterate what many of my colleagues have mentioned, there is support out there. There are free resources, low-cost resources, and many different through many different avenues, specifically the TNBC Foundation and Cancer Care. And just, you know, one quick adage that we always say is you can't pour from an empty cup. You need to be able to take care of yourself, take care of the ones that you love and are caring for.
Oh, thank you so much. And I really want to thank our speakers. You've been phenomenal. And I also want to thank our participants as well. You know, we have done this program before, but this probably has been one of the best programs we've ever done on this topic just because we've had such great speakers and such great questions. But I do want to say a few things. First of all, I do want to reiterate what Ms. Fuchs said in terms of you are not alone. You are now part of a community of support, and you have wonderful resources to go to, both the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation and Cancer Care. And, of course, your hospital where you're being cared for. Now, for those of you who were able to ask a question, that's terrific, but go back to your treating healthcare team and ask them your question as well. And for those of you who didn't get to ask your question, take your question to your healthcare team. Remember, they know you the best, and they know the most about you. Also, we've learned over many years of doing these programs that for many of you, you're able to reach your healthcare team during the day, but usually evenings, weekends, and holidays are a challenge. So always get the phone number that you should call on evenings, weekends, and holidays. Again, I want to thank you all for your participation today, and I want to wish you a very fine day. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, bye-bye. Thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.